You're listening to the weekly Portland podcast. For a complete list of episodes, visit pdxpod.com.
Coyote Peterson is one of the most popular YouTube content creators of all time. His outdoor expedition channel, known as Brave Wilderness, has accumulated over 1.6 billion views since it started in 2010. Through his adventures, Coyote aims to inspire and educate the next generation of explorers and conservationists. My name's Gregory Day, thanks for tuning in. Coyote will be appearing at Revolution Hall April 6 in support of his new book, Coyote Peterson's Brave Adventures, Wild Animals in a Wild World. Now, Coyote was nice enough to give me a call this week ahead of his appearance on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert this Wednesday. Let's listen in. Hello, hello.
Hey, Greg, it's Coyote. How are you?
Hi, doing great. Nice
Good.
To connect with you. Very exciting.
Likewise. Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for taking the time to talk on the phone. Looking forward to having a chat.
Yes, and you've got this sold-out show coming up at
Revolution
Hall.
Yeah, pretty excited. Yes. I love Portland, Oregon. Portland is like, Oregon in general is one of my favorite places in the world, so I'm very excited to be up there. I've been to Oregon in a few years now, so yeah, it's going to be fun.
Really? When was the last time you were here?
2006. I believe. I spent some time up there location scouting for an independent film. Worked with your film commission. It was in Portland, and oh my gosh, everybody there was just amazingly helpful. And we just enjoyed really exploring the backcountry. I spent several days out in the wilderness, and just, I mean, it's epic. It's just, the coast of Oregon is epic as it gets.
Oh, it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Now, you've got a big week ahead of you. I don't know if you've already taped with Stephen Colbert. But you're going to be on Wednesday.
That's Wednesday, yep.
Right. Do you actually tape it the day of?
Yeah, we'll do a rehearsal that afternoon, and then we tape, I think, somewhere between like 6 and 7 o'clock, and then it goes on the air that night. So I'm pretty excited. He is sort of the godfather of late night at this point, so I'm very excited to be on that show.
It's a big show, too. Dana Carvey and Simon Pegg are going to be on the same show as you.
Yeah. Yeah, all three of them, comedian icons, and it's really cool. I did a lot of research on Stephen. I mean, I've watched the Colbert Report, obviously watched his late night show, and then I actually dug a little deeper into his background. Didn't realize that he was one of the original writers and creators on the Dana Carvey show from many years ago that only saw, I think they only did like 7 or 10 episodes, but it was pretty cool to know it. Him and Dana's connections were from way back in the day, so that's kind of cool.
Great. Wow, you did your research.
Oh, yeah.
I love
absolutely.
That. I just finished your book, beautifully illustrated by, is it illustrated by your mother? Is that right?
Yeah,
did I read that right?
My mom is one of the illustrators. Yeah, my good friend Tia Windhofer did some of the smaller illustrations, and my mom did all the big narrative-looking landscape illustrations, and a combination of the two of them working together is what really brought that book to life.
You have a knack, your writing style, you've got a real knack for creating tension. I mean,
that's a big compliment right there.
Yes.
I appreciate that.
And yes, the illustrations, they really brought me back to my own childhood reading children's books from back in the day.
Well, that is exactly the tone we were going for. I mean, when we originally started that publishing deal in the early contractual stages, you know, it was obvious for, you know, our publishing partners to immediately think, oh, let's do screen grabs and stuff like that from your episodes. And I said, no. This thing needs to feel old school. I want
retro.
To feel those old serial novels that have illustrations. I mean, that's what I grew up on, reading Hardy Boys novels and, you know, Paul Bunyan, all those tall tales. I mean, for me, having illustrations allows your imagination to go further. So sure, people have seen the episodes, but to see it in the illustrated form is truly a work of art.
I think my favorite illustration is you as a 15-year-old boy jumping through the air in Wyoming.
Yes, yes. What's cool about that, you know, the first two chapters, the first one for called The Dragon, where I caught my first big snapping turtle, and then Rogue Buffalo, is, you know, those were moments in my life that were not captured on camera. So it's really cool for my mom to look back at old pictures of me, you know, dug into her archives, old boxes of photos to get the look right. You know, all that was drawn from actual pictures of me as a kid, obviously not in some of the action moments where, you know, I'm getting chased by a buffalo or actually catching the turtle. There wasn't a camera present for those, but the one picture in Rogue Buffalo where I'm walking through grassland, like, that's a real photograph of me that exists, and she just reincorporated it into an illustration. So it's kind of cool.
This tour is a book tour, right? This presentation you're going to be giving at Revolution Hall?
Yeah, you know, it started out as just a book tour. We've sort of evolved it since then, but it's still really following the structure of the book and its chapters. And it's this really eclectic mix of starting with this idea that reading is still an awesome thing. You know, we're so focused on our social media devices these days and watching on YouTube, which is amazing because that's where we place all of our content. But we're really trying to encourage kids to
read
again.
Educate themselves.
Kids aren't still reading, but they're reading on their Kindles or their iPads. It's like, got to pick up a book still and read and let your imagination run wild.
Right. You get a bit philosophical in this book too. Don't hesitate, face your fears. These are important things to instill in children, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I really appreciate you noticing that. Clearly, it's obvious that you have read the book. And you could say, oh, I read your book, you may not know anything about it, but I tried very hard to really put a lot of thematic content into the stories. And that's what I really enjoyed about writing the book is, you know, most people may not know that I actually write all of the voiceover scripts for our episodes. So these basic bookends that set up the narrative and then end the narrative with the content that's on YouTube. But my background is in screenwriting, film producing, and directing. So for me, I always wanted to be a writer, and getting to write a book really allowed me to exercise that, you know, just creative drive and thirst that I've always had, and being able to work in those sort of metaphorical and thematical elements to each chapter was really fun for me.
Yes, and one of those themes is perseverance, not quitting. Mm-hmm. And I think at one point you even said, this is quite profound, that obstacles are a blessing in your life.
Yeah, I mean, it's honestly obstacles that I think we all face, myself specifically, especially in an entertainment industry like this one, where you're trying to go after almost the impossible. I mean, it's one thing to go out and be like, I want to be in a TV show, or I want to be in a play, or I want to be in a movie. It's another thing to go out and be like, I want to be an animal adventure star, a person that speaks for animals, that promotes conservation. It's a very tough field to get into. So
yes,
I faced many obstacles along the way, and, you know, I've got an incredible support team behind me, and, you know, we're just doing our best to bring animals to the world.
Towards the end of the book, you mentioned something in passing, is that you spend a lot of your time visualizing what you need to do before you complete it. Is that is that part of your, you know, your preparation? I mean, all your adventures, you've just got to visualize it before you experience it?
You know, that's interesting, because nobody's ever really asked me that before, and now that I think about it, it is a very true thing. A recent example could be, we just were filming in South Africa, and we set off on this expedition to catch a Nile monitor, which is this huge lizard that lives in South Africa. And before we went on the expedition, I will oftentimes envision what it is that I'm going to have to do to catch or interact with one of these animals. And a lot of times, almost like you're sort of placing it ahead of yourself in your future, you play out the scenario in your mind the way that it can go down. And oftentimes I'll actually play out what could go wrong. So I think about, okay, if this happens, what do I have to do to manipulate or maneuver the situation to where I keep myself, the crew, and of course the animals safe at all points in time. So I'm constantly sort of thinking about these things in motion before they actually go down, so that when I find myself in that moment, and talking specifically about the Nile monitor,
there's been a lot of those moments.
Yeah, and it turns out to be epic. And, you know, a lot of times as we're moving along through environments and whatnot, I'm writing the story in my mind. Like, I'm thinking about the voiceover script that I'm going to write as we're actually on the adventure. And that'll oftentimes help me work with Mark Livens, who's our director, and our wildlife biologist, Mario Aldecoa, to say, okay, let's get this shot here. Let's grab that shot. Look at how the light's coming through the trees like this. And I will think about those elements when we're out there in the field capture them on camera, and then go back and write the stories to parallel the experience that we had.
Right. So you're thinking like a director as you're experiencing it.
Right. Exactly. And that's why I think we've been very fortunate to make, you know, the artistic and well-produced content that we have is that I'm not just a show host. I'm somebody that's already thinking about what it takes from behind the camera and from the editing perspective and story writing aspects of, like, how do we make this the best and most engaging episode that we can for our audience and, of course, get across the right information and show people these animals.
Right. And you even own up to your mistakes. That's what I enjoyed about this book also. Now, always pay attention to your surroundings. Chapter 7, the bear scare.
Yep.
It was a perfect storm to run into a bear. But you do have this sort of spider sense. You always seem to get yourself out of trouble and have the knowledge to do so.
So far, so good. And, you know, that goes as long as, like, until there's one that actually gets you, which hopefully I won't encounter that. But, you know, I've definitely had my fair share of close calls, and I'm always the first one. You know, whenever we have an instance in the field, whether I'm accidentally bitten by a Gila monster, if I fall off of a cliff, like, instead of just cutting the cameras, I tell the cameras to keep going. Like, we have to document this. I mean, granted, if it was, like, truly, like, oh, my gosh, like, I am so badly hurt, like, this might be the end, we wouldn't film it. But if it's an instance where it's like, okay, I'm hurt, we have to educate the audience about what just happened here and what did I learn. Because if everybody out there watching can learn from my mistakes, they may say to themselves, I'm going to go ahead and not get close to a Gila monster. I saw what just happened to Coyote. There's no way I'm getting close to that lizard. So, you know, it's instances like that where people can learn from my follies. It's going to be a better day for everybody.
Well, I'm not going to get near one. I know that for sure. When did you meet Mario?
We actually met him for the first time filming in the Everglades down in Florida. He was working as a crocodile conservation research expert, worked with a field team, and we went out with him on a couple of expeditions, once into the Everglades to look for alligators and another time specifically to search for American crocodiles. And he was just so professional, so knowledgeable. He had a camera background, so he was like this perfect package of adventure, wildlife, and cinematography. And for years, we just, you know, sort of freelance hired him to come on trips until we finally were at the point, actually just about a year ago, that we were able to hire him full-time, and he has since relocated to Ohio, and he's now a full-time part of the Brave Wilderness team.
Right. You've connected with some really interesting people on this show. Steve Crochelle comes to mind.
You know, everybody that I talk with and have an interview, somehow Steve always comes up, which is just phenomenal, because he is honestly one of the most, I didn't even know how to define Steve. Like, special is an understatement.
He's a very interesting man.
He's connected to the universe in a way that I have never witnessed with another person, and his talents for speaking with animals and interacting with something like a wolverine, it's on another level. It's just unbelievable, and you have to almost like meet him in person to really truly grasp what that is. And I think we did a good job at capturing the essence in our Wolverine episode. And Steve and I have remained super close friends, and the work that he's trying to do for Wolverine conservation is just, it's incredibly important, because these animals are disappearing off the face of our planet, and for no good reason. People hunt them still for their fur, and it's like nobody needs a wolverine coat these days, you know? This is a predator. This is a perfectly designed predator that is helping to balance the ecosystem. I mean, I understand that back in the 1800s when people relied on fur coats to survive, but today to have a wolverine coat or whatever wolverine pelts are used for, there's just no reason, you know?
Boy, I never realized how cute they are.
They are. They're cute, except if you get on their bad side, they're like a tornado of claws and jaws, and it is arguably the most voracious and aggressive predator on the planet. I mean, they will scare bears. They will scare packs of wolves off of their kills. A wolverine that weighs no more than a golden retriever can literally take down something as large as a moose. So it's quite the predator. It's impressive.
That's incredible. The way you wrote this book, I felt the hypothermia setting in my feet. Metaphorically, I mean, in Chapter 9, this salmon adventure, I could almost feel the experience with you. That must have been truly, truly scary to have white skin, white knuckles, actually beginning stages of hypothermia.
It really was. I mean, I've been in some instances before growing up in the snow belt in Ohio where I had gotten cold and I had fallen through the ice in a pond and I was like, oh man, I got to hike back to the house. I'm soaking wet, you know, and it was going to take me 10 or 15 minutes. But when we were out there in Alaska, I mean, I was deep out there in the Alaskan wilderness. And there was a point where once I had come out of the water, when you're in the moment and I have the fish and I'm presenting, you know, I was getting colder and colder and I could feel it. And I was literally sitting in the water the entire time. And when you're moving, it's one thing, but when your body slows down and you're trying to just keep control of this animal, I was getting colder and colder and colder. And by the time we had wrapped on the episode and I went back to our base camp, which keep in mind, we had no fire lit, we had nothing like that. I was so cold that I was afraid that hypothermia was going to set in or that I was going to get frostbite. And it's actually stuff that I learned from watching Bear Grylls' Man vs. Wild that I did to bring blood back into my feet, my hands, doing jumping jacks, doing push-ups, running back and forth in the forest. I probably looked like a crazy man, but it worked, and I recovered just fine with no worse for the wear.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, the book was great. I've looked at a couple of your other shows, Hot Ones. You did an interview on Hot Ones. I'm kind of curious what that 2 million Scoville rated hot sauce, what are the after effects of that?
the after effects, it puts you in this weird sort of comatose state when they call cut at the end of the episode. Sean Evans, who hosts Hot Ones, which is just, he's one of the most talented presenters I've ever worked
with. He's great.
He's a phenom, and you know, and Sean and I have become good friends since then. And how he does that every week just boggles my mind. But for me personally, the after effects didn't really happen until like a day or so later, and I'll just give that one up for the listener's imagination at this point. That you eat that many hot wings in a row and you do that last dab, trust me, you pay for it a couple days later.
Did you ever think you'd be this big of a star?
You know, what's funny is that I don't consider myself a big star. Like, I look at my team and I and what we've created, and we're here in central Ohio where there's no entertainment industry. And
that's right.
No,
it's Ohio area code. Right.
Yeah, we're just a small company, and it's amazing. We have millions of people that are watching the shows. And for us, the biggest reward at the end of the day is really just that kids are enjoying animals and getting the chance to live vicariously through the adventures that we're going on. And as long as the universe keeps allowing me to go on this track and have these epic adventures with my friends and get to see the world and then get to share with everybody else, I'm a happy camper. That's all it really takes for me. I'm a pretty simple guy.
I love it. And great answer. Thank you so much, Coyote. I really appreciate
you
taking the time out to speak with us
of
today.
Course.
Looking forward to seeing you in Portland.
Okay, sounds good. Well, if you're going to be at the show, definitely let us know, and we'll make sure to get you backstage. I'd love to meet you in person. So.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
See you then.
Bye. Thanks, Greg.
And thank you for listening to the Weekly Portland Podcast at pdxpodcast.com. My name is Gregory Day. We will see you next week. Please join me. Why?